All right. This evening, I have quite a treat. I have my friend Bo Hanlon, who is joining me in the studio today. Now, you might notice that the place looks a little bit different, and that's because it is. What I've done is I've moved our little podcast into a different room, and we're trying to make it a little bit more serious, and we're even trying a little multicam thing. So, forgive us if there's any technical hiccups. But to the man at hand, Bo Hanlon is a gentleman that I've known for a very long time, and I know him through his service to the fire department. I know him through his service and commitment to rotary-engined sports cars, and I also know him, and the reason I got him on the show today was to talk a little bit about a charitable exercise he does every year, Bikes for Burns, but we'll get to that. Before we go any further, Bo, thanks for joining me, buddy.
Absolute pleasure to be here, mate. Thanks for having me.
Mate, it's lovely to have you in the studio today. Bo, for people that have never met you, how do you fill your days? Do you want to share that with us?
Oh, work-wise or
mate, let's start work. With work-wise. You're a bit of an icon with what you do there too.
Well, not if you ask my workmates.
Ah, that's all right. That's what your workmates are supposed to do to you, buddy.
Oh, that's it. They keep me honest.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Oh, we just go to work. We drive around in a big red truck and react to some things that might happen during the day.
And see, he's modest as always. The big red truck that he's referring to, do you want to elaborate on that a bit for me, mate?
I'm a Queensland firefighter, so full-time firefighter in the Brisbane region.
And have they ever invited you to be in the calendar?
No.
Oh, why not, mate? That's disgraceful.
Oh, the physique's not quite what they're looking for.
What are you talking about? Fit man, cyclist, wear a lot of lycra.
Generally fit, but maybe just the legs, if they did a legs calendar.
Legs calendar? Mm. Yeah, mate, the Queensland Fireys calves. I believe there'd be an audience for that.
Well, if you can get the right audience for me, then maybe we can chat.
Mm. Yeah, 12 months of Bo's calves. Let me know if you want to see a bit more of that. Bo, how did you end up in the fire service? I'm really interested to know. I'm interested to know a little bit more about the story of Bo, because sure. All these years I've known you, I don't know any of that story. So okay. do you want to backpedal for me and
absolutely
take me all the way back?
It's not really exciting, I don't think. I wasn't one growing up thinking I want to be a firefighter. I hadn't even thought about it until I sort of put the application in. In about 07 or so. So I graduated high school in 98, sorry. There was a bit of stuff going on then in terms of work and overseas and uni and whatnot, but in terms of the fire service specifically, I'd actually broken my leg playing indoor soccer, which isn't specifically related, but I thought I was at home for quite a while off my legs. At the time I was working for my dad, he ran a cleaning business. So I was working with him and completing uni. I thought, well, you know, I didn't want to specifically be a cleaner for the rest of my life. I had a few hobbies and I tried to keep fit, and I thought, well, what am I going to do? And it popped into my head. My friend had mentioned it a couple of times. He was in the fire service, an old neighbour. And I thought, well, let's put the application in. And that was around, 07, 08 and 09 was when I got accepted and got through all of the testing. It was a rigorous testing sort of regime. Lots of different types of testing, characteristics, maths, English, mechanical reasoning, fitness, obviously. And then come around May 09, I was starting recruits.
And what does that look like? What does it look like first day when you turn up to the fire service?
Oh, it's like school again.
Is it?
Yeah. In saying that,
in a good way or a bad way?
Look,
depends on your experience.
I love school. Yeah, absolutely. I get and I understand that a lot of people didn't like the whole process of school. I loved it. This recruit school was 4 months of just a lot of information packed in. I won't say I thrived, but I enjoyed the whole process. You know that it's 4 months. You know you're being trained and taught and you're doing a lot of things, and there's a lot of information in that 4 months. And and some people say that you will know the most the day you finish, and then you start to go on a bit of a decline. Not so much a decline, but in terms of the amount of information that you know about firefighting, and not just fire, there's so much more to it. road crash rescues, vertical rescues, like other technical rescues, scientific and hazmat style incidents. There's so much jam packed into that 4 months. You think that's a long time, but it's not.
It's not for that, for the range of things that you have to deal with.
Yeah, it's not just burning buildings anymore.
No. Far out.
Mm.
So you made it through that. What happens at the end of your 4 months?
So graduation ceremony, we had a small group of 16 in our recruit course. So we get allocated a station or a region generally. I was Brisbane region, and that's what I'd selected, and a shift. And then you turn up to wherever they tell you and you say good day and sort of go about your day. Do what they tell you pretty much for the first 3 years is like an apprenticeship. You know, you come straight out of recruits and you've got assessments to do for the first, like, for 3 years. Assessments, like, not just written assessments, but practical, like what they call a grade to grade each year until you become first class firefighter.
And so, sorry, how long was that?
So 3 years from the day you start, 5th of May, was my sort of anniversary date. 3 years after that is your compulsory study. So like an apprenticeship. It's effectively, you come out of that with a diploma.
Okay, and so that's where I guess you get your hands on. You've done your four months of theory,
yeah,
and then you sort of get thrust into the
real world. I mean, there's a lot of practical work through that as well. Like you're doing scenarios. You go to a live fire campus, which is down at White Island at the Port of Brisbane as well.
Do you know I've actually driven past that? I didn't realise if you've been on the Moreton Island Ferry.
Exactly, that's exactly where it is.
Because I was looking across the road because a friend of mine had a pretty serious breakdown. And we ended up having to wait for a towie coming off the island. And so I sat there for a very long time and I'm staring at like these shops and stuff.
It
looks like a big shopping centre, but it's got gates up and saying this is not a real shopping centre.
It could be confusing, I guess, especially for tourists that might turn up to Moreton Bay.
Oh, and they're going, oh, sweet, I can go and get, you know, Dagwood Dog. But, yeah, it's actually a massive, training facility for sort of fire and rescue services.
Yep.
Far out. So you've done a heap of simulation stuff.
They do, I guess, sort of cold runs.
Yeah.
At that premise.
Yep.
Where they can fill those buildings with smoke.
Yeah, right.
So obviously we're still wearing our breathing apparatus and whatnot, but
it
cuts out the visual.
Uh-huh.
And it gives you a bit of a feeling of, where am I? And you've got to train to do your certain searches and, you're always with a teammate, a buddy. You don't ever go in anywhere alone. And that's part of the way we work in the fire service.
What's it like the first time going into those sort of scenarios, even in training?
Oh, it's pretty daunting. But like anything, you just, take a breath. It's all calculated. You do get surprises here and there, but it's like anything, just follow the process. Follow the training and work through it.
And that keeps you safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's quite funny, as I stood there staring at that place, I was imagining, the amount of work, people like yourself have to go through, just to stay stay ready, to be alert, to deal with all the things that you'd end up seeing day to day.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you'd be what then, about 2013?
Yeah. Yep, and then you finished that sort of 3 years and you can opt to do different types of things then, like branch out into, like I mentioned before, technical rescue. You get a basic understanding of that and a basic level of training, but you can do extra things with that. You might opt to go and do your senior firefighters and then become a station officer, so you're in charge of the station then. You can do other areas of study as well, like road crash rescue. You can compete internationally, like if you are successful in that. There's so many things you can do.
In the Mr. Firefighter Championships?
Well, there are firefighter championships.
And sorry, that was just a terrible calendar joke there.
Yeah, no.
But
no,
there really are. So there's actually...
Yeah, fitness and...
Seriously?
Yeah. I've not competed in any of them, but even firefighter games, they do any sport or a range of sports. You can choose to, there's criterium cycling, there's weightlifting, lawn bowls, tug of war. It's pretty full on. And they host that in places around the world.
Yeah, really?
Every year, yep.
See, the things you don't even know. This is what's so fun about this stuff and talking to people. Like there's whole other worlds that you don't even know about until you sort of lift the lid and have a look. What tickled your fancy when you came out the other side there? What did you want to do?
Okay, so, I mean, the deciding factor for not just me, but for my wife, we had our first child, and then I joined and just had our second child. 2010 was our second child. This has given us work-life balance. Well, me specifically. My wife still works. She works 4 days a week now. I'm lucky to work 2 days from home. Part of that's because of COVID and whatnot. But it's given us so much flexibility with that. Like, I've been able to get to school, you know, all of the school carnivals, take them to swimming, drop them off, pick them up. A lot of that, like, I might miss out on things here and there in terms of the shift work because I might be working weekends or nights. But the opportunities that it's given me with the time with them, you can't beat it.
Got to agree with you on that. As a parent myself these days, that's actually one of my favourite things about working for myself, even though, again, yeah, you have to sacrifice fairly considerably in other areas.
Absolutely.
Being able to go to stuff at school and see him there and drop him off and walk him in.
Oh, it's amazing. Like, I love that. You can't buy that back.
No, you can't, mate.
Doesn't matter how much you earn.
No.
What you do, like, you know, we're both, my wife and I are both public servants.
Mm.
You know, we don't get paid a heap, but we definitely get, you know, get by. And the time that we've got to do the things that we want to do is great.
There's special times, mate. I honestly can't be more grateful than I am these days. To be able to do those things and like school carnivals and stuff and going and seeing little concerts and
love it.
Mate, the other one I really enjoyed was the Colour Run.
Yeah.
Where you peg the stuff at
where
them.
You get involved.
Yeah, that was great fun. Yeah. Like, absolutely trying to scone on with that.
Yeah.
there's something surprisingly entertaining about throwing the coloured powder at them.
Yes.
So that was what – because you're in one of the – what they call your station? So what's
– So we're at a fire station, yeah.
Fire station, yeah.
I'm at Cannon Hill specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how far out do you go from Cannon Hill? Like, what's
– usual station area or response area will be about 14 to 15 Ks, you know, depending where they are. And, you know, we've got a sort of a 15-minute response time to get to wherever we need to go by the time they call. It's often a lot quicker than that, but within the Brisbane area, you've got stations pretty close by. They might be sort of 5 to 7 Ks apart, a bit further as you get out further from the city.
That's wild. That is a very fast response time.
Yeah. Oh, it's, and as I said, often it's faster. I don't have the particular figures, but I think sort of 14 to 15 minutes is the maximum within any Brisbane area.
And as you start, just for my own interest, as you started doing it, I mean, what are the sort of things that you generally get called out to? Is it like what fills the days?
Oh, days. I mean, straight up, we'll check the truck. I mean, we'll have a changeover with the off-going crew. Check the truck, make sure it's all good to go. We'll visit schools. We'll go to businesses and check their maintenance records and exits and things like that. Mainly making sure that the companies that they're paying to do those checks are doing them. Bit of, you know, community work. We'll go and see. It might be me something in the park that one of the councillors has asked us to go to. We can go to things like that. It's definitely not the filling up swimming pools and going to kids' birthday parties like it might have been in the day. But we keep the days pretty busy. Bit of fitness in there. We can do that at station if we're not actually out on a job. And then obviously you've got, you know, so they're the proactive things that we do, then the reactive, obviously a range of jobs there, as I sort of touched on earlier.
What surprised you about the job?
What surprised me? So many things. Just the people you see, not just the firefighters, but the community. It's, and I've always enjoyed getting out and seeing people and speaking to people, and I think inherently helping people, I've always enjoyed that all through school. You know, I was always doing the door knocks, doing things like that. Just getting out there and speaking and being involved with people, I love it.
And there are obviously parts of the job that would be reasonably traumatic. How do you and I guess your fellow staff, I mean, how do you deal with those things?
First of all, is we've got our crew, you know, you chat to your mates about it. that's and of course, yeah, we do see stuff and we're involved in stuff that might not necessarily be good. People sort of, yeah, they do ask us how we deal with it. Step one is chat to your mates. It's not always easy, but when we're in a truck together, we're driving home, we're going back to station, we're there together, we'll always chat about it. If there's an issue, we can usually pick up. You can't always, but we can usually see if there's an issue with someone, you know, if they're a bit down or whatever. But I think good thing is the fire service has got a few things in place. Like we've got chaplains available that will come and speak to us. We've got peer support officers that are available to us to speak to, who are usually firefighters that have been trained in dealing with crisis and trauma and things like that. And then we've also got available to us actual therapists that we can see if we feel or someone else feels that we might need that extra help.
Really?
Yeah, the professional help, which is
it's actually fantastic. Really impressive that they're that well organised.
Yeah.
Caring about, you know, your well-being, because, you know, there's certain other parts of, you know, working life, government life, all sorts of places that probably haven't put that much thought into it. It sounds very well. Is that something that's like, is there a fireys union or something? Like how does that come about?
There is a union that is quite what's the word? They're quite strong in being able to provide and make sure that the fire service is providing that for us. I don't specifically know how these things came about, but you know, usually chaplain and the peer support level is quite commonly, you know, the chaplain will come around and speak to us if we've had an incident that's been traumatic. And that's like there's no religious, like they are.
But it's someone to talk to.
Absolutely. And they're always great. Like there's been probably half a dozen instances in my, I guess you could call it a career, almost 15 years that the chaplains come around station. Yeah. Thankfully, so far, I feel I've been generally well with dealing with things. But look, I don't know if that will last. No one knows. Like, I don't know. A switch could flick tomorrow, 5 years, 10 years down the track, and I don't know. Might be something that I've seen, something totally unrelated that I might see. I don't know.
It's just really impressive. I actually did see, my wife was talking to me about it. Apparently, there's some new legislation coming in. Around businesses supporting mental health.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if it's actually been put through, but
I don't know in terms of the fire service.
Yeah.
Like, I know there are certain things in terms of cancers and health style, but obviously mental health is also one of them.
Yeah, because there's something coming, which I think is actually really lovely, because
it's whole of government, for sure, it will filter down through to the fire service.
Yeah, but it just sounds like the fire service are actually a long way ahead of the game, because you know, one of the advantages of what I do is I get to see, you know, reasonably intimately into, you know, a significant cross-section of business and industry.
Yeah.
And it's rare for there to be that level of support.
Sure.
I mean, obviously what you do is at the extremity, but I'm not even sure if that sort of stuff exists in, like, you know, QPS and stuff. It doesn't.
I imagine it does. I believe it does. I don't know the exact answer, so I can't say for sure. But, you know, I think we're lucky in the fire service. We probably don't deal with it as much on a day-to-day basis as QAS and QPS, you know, the ambulance and police.
Yeah, they're dealing with real bad stuff.
Every single day. So hats off to them. Like, I think we've definitely got the better side of the stick in terms of that. But, you know, it's like anything. You try and how would I say it? Like a nuclear instance, nuclear bomb, nuclear whatever, a spill. Obviously, you're trying to stay away from it if you can. Yeah, if you can't stay away from it, just limit your exposure. If you have to be there, wear the protection. You know, I've got a pretty proactive station officer. So when we go to jobs, if we don't have to be, if there is a traumatic incident, if we don't have to be right there, we don't just mill around. Like, it makes sense. You know, we stay back until we're needed or do other things. Like, there's always so many things to do rather than just being focused on that one thing. But, you know, that's any job too, you know. There's always things to do.
Makes sense. And I guess I'm then very interested to talk to you about, you know, your charitable endeavours.
Yeah.
That was actually one of the reasons that I wanted you on here today, was just to get you to explain to me what you do with regard to Bikes for Burns and what it is and how it started. And
okay.
Yeah, if you could tell me all about it.
Look, I didn't start Bike for Burns. It's not my thing. I've just jumped on board. Now, it is something that a few firefighters started about when I started. And it was basically something that they started to promote wellness for firefighters, get them moving, get them active again. Obviously, we've got the capability to do some wellness at station, but it's, well, let's do something more. And they started, oh, well, let's ride our bikes to wherever. And then to attach that, they said, well, we need, well, not that we need to, but we want, they wanted to do it for a cause. So they, kids with burns, what better cause, you know? So they attached to the Children's Hospital Foundation and then the Royal Brisbane Hospital. They're now at the Queensland Children's Hospital. And everything that we do goes to that burns unit. Now, for me personally, I'd never really ridden a bike. You know, I did a bit of mountain biking beforehand, not much, but I didn't have my own road bike. But this, I borrowed someone's bike to do it the first time about 10 years ago, 3 weeks beforehand. And then off we are doing 700 Ks in a week.
And see, that's just madness, like all of it. All of it is madness, and the way that you approach it is madness, and that's kind of what I love about it. Because you also build a bike each year, did you?
Oh, not specific. There's been a few times where I've built bikes. I thought, let's just build something to ride on for this year. And 1 year I gave that bike away, and, you know, another year it's, well, I've got this frame, let's build it up and give it a go. And then happened to also ride it up to Gympie to start that year. Previously also, yeah, the day before ridden from, where was that? I think we rode to Bundy. Yeah, that was a big one. Rode to Bundy in a day.
From Brizzy?
From Brizzy to then start the ride the following day.
That's just
I'd never done anything like that. But I sort of come back to why I sort of started it. I started to help my fitness a little bit. Not like I wasn't unfit, but I thought, oh, yeah, I can get something out of this and then also help people. So I started fundraising a little bit as well.
How many people are involved? How many people do the ride each year?
Oh, between, in terms of riders, 30 to 50. So we keep it pretty small. We don't open it up to the general public like some of the other rides. And again, we keep it to the emergency services family. And that's the people that ride. There's usually about 15 support crew. And we keep costs down as much as we can for the riders because we're taking time off our work. So we usually stay in places like PCYCs, showgrounds, and we've got a, you know, we've got support from a lot of really good businesses, and they'll provide a Pantech for us, like Isuzu trucks provide a Pantech for us to carry our gear in. Budget car and trucks, they provide a bus for us to drive while we're going along as well. Then obviously got support from the fire services that provide fire trucks that are in front and behind each riding group, you know, because we try and keep safe. But yeah, I think that for me, that's part of it. Like, I wouldn't want to be doing this and staying in hotels along the way. It's like staying in those places, going to those, like the showgrounds and meeting the people, that going into town, going to the pub, having a few beers there and then going back, having a sleep and then getting on the bike and doing it all again. It's good fun.
Sounds great.
It is. And look, we also try and get into those towns and support them. Like, we've been through a lot of places that have been decimated by, I mean, floods last year. So we went Gladstone inland down to Brisbane, and everywhere down there had been smashed by the floods. Previously, we've been, like, we try and mix it up all around Queensland. Up north, Tully, been smashed all around that area. You know, North Queens got smashed by the cyclones. And we're riding through there, and this is like 9 months or 18 months later, and the trees are still all stripped from the cyclones. It's just surreal. So we go in and we try and, you know, we're not obviously curing, you know, everything, but we try and put a bit of money back into those without drawing from those communities, you know. So we'll go and, you know, when we turn up to it, we'll come buy a few things at the pub. We might go and go to the cafe and, you know, cake, coffee, whatever, just try and generate a bit more stuff. When you get 50 to 80 people turning up to a town for, even if it's for an hour for morning tea or lunch or a coffee, it puts a bit of cash into the
community. Puts a few bucks in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you've got an entourage of 80-odd people rolling through. Because is it something that gets much coverage? Because, look, if I didn't know you, I wouldn't know about this.
Not specifically. Like a lot of fireys don't do it to obviously get the word out, but we want to obviously probably get a bit more word out about the research and burns and things like that, because that doesn't get much funding from government and even from elsewhere. So that's probably the big thing for me, is trying to push that a little bit, and the progresses that have been made in burns treatment and research, thanks to the guys at the Children's Hospital Foundation, and well, more so specifically the burns unit at the Queensland Children's Hospital. The doctors there and the teams there and the researchers there are just absolutely phenomenal. It hasn't been a heap of money, but it's been enough to help.
And that's something I've worked with like Prince Charles Hospital Foundation. QIMR and a few of those places. And I guess I didn't realise, and it's probably worth even just diving into this a little bit.
Yeah.
How little of, that research is funded.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like there's sort of no federal or local or state funding going towards
so much stuff.
Cures for
stuff.
Like all the diseases, illnesses, ailments that affect the human race.
Yep.
Most of that stuff is privately funded.
Yeah,
so either
absolutely.
Wealthy benefactors or stuff that's bequeathed or just good old fashioned fundraising. Yep. And I was pretty horrified that the more I find out about stuff, the more things I get involved in, the more I'm horrified at stuff that's underfunded, particularly when I see money. And look, I don't like to say wasted. Really thrown around, really quite recklessly spent, because, I've been horrified when I've sort of seen, how little's put into, public school funding and these sorts of things. Yeah. And I just look at it and I'm like, is this a joke?
Yeah.
And then stuff like this where, you're trying to improve the quality of people's lives and particularly with kids who, they're not geared up to cope with any of these things that come their way.
No, not specifically. And look, part of the funding has been to go to things that will help them with that, to like the diversionary therapy, like effectively iPad style things that explains a lot of the things to them about what's happening and how they're treated. Like you'd be surprised. You don't need to hide this from the kids. They know what's going on. They know they're injured. Okay, well, what's happening to me? Once they sort of understand that, they can sort of, okay, well, they can mentally form their own opinions and, I guess, deal with what they're going through as well.
Well, that's it. They can ask questions and they can, find a way to, at least communicate or attempt to understand what it is they're experiencing. Because, I would have to assume that you've spent some time. You've gone to visit?
Yeah, visited the hospital. Not so much now because of the COVID protocol, but prior to that, Roma Street specifically did monthly visits, and we've been there as well outside of that just for Bike for Burns and visit the burns unit. Look, it is probably a touchy subject, and partly because parents, if their children are getting burnt, they might feel responsible. So a lot of them don't like to talk about it, and that's absolutely fine. I get that. But we've been so lucky to meet a few families, and our current ambassador, Charlie, he got burnt a few years ago. His family are great. Prior to that, Cammy burnt, and this probably comes back to one of the things that you love to do, camping. People need to put out their campfires with water, not covering it with sand. And look, it's probably not intentional. Some of it's just not knowing. But you cover your campfire with sand, it's an oven.
You create an inferno.
Third-degree burns for up to 2 days.
And, that's how Fraser Island lit up as well. It's my understanding that the people that lit that fire just threw sand over the top of it.
Again, I don't know, but very, very possible. Mm. But anyway, meeting these families and the fact that they've given their time to us has been fantastic. So I want to try and help out them.
Because, I mean, that's and that's a lot to deal with. I mean, going to the hospital for any reason is to, you know, go and support people's a complex time. But, yeah, as I said, even harder for parents and parents of children and, you know, the responsibility and the burden and then also the discomfort of the child. Yeah. You know, that's and that's – I think it's part of the reason I wanted you on here, mate. Like, these are not nice topics to talk about.
No, not specifically, no.
And that was, I guess, why I wanted to talk about it because they're difficult.
They are.
Like, it's genuinely – like, even sitting here now, this is a hard conversation to have going, you know –
talking about kids that are getting burnt.
Yeah, which direction do I take this and how do – you know, how do we explore this?
You know, it's like my job. It's not just fires anymore, but it's not just campfires. There's so many ways that – probably some of the main things are obviously stoves. It still happens. Hot stoves, you know, turning your handle around. You know, again, it's not intentional, but parents can feel very responsible for that. And it's not intentional. You know, coffee, things in microwaves, steam burns. You know, there's so many different ways that kids can get burnt. And look, if obviously besides putting water on the campfires, if nothing else gets taken away from today, the best thing that you can do if you find yourself or your child in a situation where they're burnt, tap water for 20 minutes or until first aid gets there or more advanced first aid gets there. Just running tap water is the best thing you can do for that burn. None of that, put butter on it, don't do it. If you don't have running tap water, beach, get in the water. Something is better than, if you think it's not fresh water, doesn't matter. Something is better than nothing. Just get some running water on it. If you've got bottles of water, whatever, anything.
And explain to me, you know, explain like I'm five, why does that work? It's probably the obvious, but I'd appreciate hearing it from...
And look, I'm not a medical professional, but just draws that heat out. It stops and lessens the severity of the burn. Effectively stops things burning or slows it down considerably, which is the best thing for it initially. Like there are better things for it that obviously those extra professionals will be able to do. And that is where some of the research has come into play, some of the initial treatments and first aid or advanced first aid for those burns.
And what happens? Talk to me about some of the more advanced treatments.
Oh, obviously there's burn aid and there's burn creams and whatnot. You know, probably the biggest risk factor after the initial burn is getting things infected. So even wrapping it, a lot of them will wrap it with Glad Wrap, but that's more what the ambulance will do when they get there potentially. There are some of the things that they've researched is like silver lined band-aids, effectively large sort of dressings. That's the word, silver lined dressings, which really improves how things repair themselves. Again, I don't know the specifics, just learning from what we've read, but that's a lot of the stuff that's come out of the research that the crew have done down there. Queensland Children's Hospital.
And it's just so critical having that work being done, and I think that was what, you know, it's part of the reason why I think these things are so important is there are so many things in life that just need a spotlight. You know, there are just so many things and, you know, the list is endless and there's so many people that just work away tirelessly with, you know, very little... I don't know. Very, very little of it comes to light in a more public forum, and I think that's just a shame. And you know, this is only a little show, but it delights me that you know we can try and discuss these sorts of things that you know would otherwise, you know, the conversation might not happen in a more public forum.
And that's as important to me as like. You know, as I mentioned to you earlier, the last few years you dig deep and support financially. You know, your donations each year boosts me to keep trying and keep going, you know. But this is probably more valuable as far as I'm concerned, having a chat about it. If this can reach one person, five people, 10 people, it doesn't matter. If someone sees, okay, well, if this happens, I can do this or let's put this fire out properly. If that prevents someone else getting burnt, fantastic.
Because it's just not something you want to happen.
No. I've, and accidents happen.
Mate, accidents happen. And, you know, as you listed all the ways people can burn themselves, unfortunately I'm there going, yep, done that. Oop, yep. And that. Oop, done the steam, done the cast iron. The cast iron was probably the worst, mate. Holy hell. when I forgot and I just like grabbed it off the stove and like, sweet baby Jesus. I did actually know at least to put my hand under the running water, but that's one of the worst I've ever done to myself.
My brother got burnt when he was young too.
Mm.
Probably 3 or 4 pot off the stove.
Oh.
And look, I think thankfully my parents just did the right thing, whether they knew it or not, straight under running water. No, he's got no after effects, which is great. And, you know, it didn't really occur to me back then what was going on. It's just, well, let's go and get him checked out at the hospital. But he was fine, thankfully. You know, so many friends that I went to school with or outside of school had met, I didn't realise, but they'd been through burns and they, you know, occasionally touch base and say thanks for what you're doing, you know. Often with a hefty donation towards the yearly tally.
And I think that that's so nice is that I think that one of the complexities around today is that there are so many things is the other problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, there's every cause has a day. And
exactly right.
There's so many things to split your attention and, you know, which basically nullifies my previous argument of trying to give this one a platform. But
yeah, absolutely. And look, I try and think of different ways to fundraise because, you know, I understand people are doing it tough in different areas and to different extents. But like, well, how else can I do these things? And this is probably where the cycling community that I've been involved in have really put in a lot of work. Well, they've donated a lot of – people have started donating bikes and bicycle parts to me and I've been just selling them on Marketplace through those cycling avenues and raising money for that, raising money that way, which, you know, I put the time in. I might have to fix a few things up here and there, but that's – over the last couple of years, that's been a good way to raise a bit of cash.
So explain that to me a little bit better. So people donate
– yeah, so friends or the extended community have sort of heard that I'm trying to raise money and they will donate, for example, a bike or a set of wheels or a group set for those of you who know much about cycling. Like that's the thing that changes the gears, you know, the shifters and whatnot. They'll donate those things to me and then I'll give them a bit of a tidy up, place them online, sell them, and any money then gets donated.
And see, that's a lovely way because, you know, if you just
people
got
still
something,
giving then.
Yeah, if you've got something sitting around the garage that, you know.
They might not have the cash at the time, which again is fine. I'm never going to force anyone to donate money. Like you said before, there's so many different things you can donate to, whether it's money or your time or whatever. But this is sometimes an easy way for people to just, oh yeah, I've got, you know, that set of wheels that I don't use anymore, that's old tech. But there's still a market for a lot of that stuff.
Absolutely. If you got one of those fixies on the wall that you bought in 2012,
yeah.
You know, when riding a fixie, you thought that was a good idea. Yeah. And that's still sitting in your garage. I've seen a few of those kicking around.
Yep. I might have a couple of them at home too.
Of course you do. I think that that's really lovely. And I mean, that is an innovative way of trying to fundraise a little bit
better. Yeah, rather than just saying, hey guys, give me some money again. Like, it does get a bit old. And when there's 10,000 people asking you the same thing, okay, well, how else can I do it? And that was sort of one of the ways that I've come up with.
Because interestingly, I view it the same way, you know, with what you do and the way you do it. It's the energy that you bring to it.
Oh.
It's, mate, you do it with such enthusiasm and, you know, you do it with a smile and you do it with a spring in your step. And I've often looked at this and, you know, this is something we have to jump into as well.
Yeah.
Like in motorsport and that sort of stuff
and
personalities and identities. Like you buy into the person.
Yeah.
You know, same as when you buy from a business.
Mm, mm.
You know, you're not buying from the business.
You're buying, absolutely.
You're buying from the individual because you're invested in that person, that personality, that character. And I think that's always been it for me is that, you know, I've just always enjoyed.
I think that's why we got on so well from the start. Like, you know, obviously, you know, there's a few of us that have been around, not forever, but we've sort of known each other from back when I was doing a few things. You were always doing this. Yeah. A few other people in the industry and the scene.
And this is probably where we should, you know, as we try and tie these things together.
Yeah.
Bo and I met through the sport of drifting And here in Southeast Queensland, we've always actually had a very strong community. And if you don't know what drifting is, it's your car going sideways and vaporising the tyres. Yeah. So it's a little bit better known now, whereas when we were sort of involved, it was relatively early days. And it was still a bit hoony and sideways burnouts and people didn't really get it. But you had a little business then as well, if I recall correctly.
Importing cars and parts from Japan. So this sort of brings it back to prior to the fire service.
It does.
I studied uni. Japanese and accounting were my majors there, so commerce and international business. And now I'm probably the highest qualified firefighter in Australia. No, not really. But through that, I studied Japanese through high school as well. So I went to Japan after I graduated high school. So 99, went over to Japan and studied high school again for a year on exchange, lived with a Japanese family. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic experience. And through that, I met a good friend of mine, Mr. Hara. At that stage, he was coming to Australia every year and just, you know, over Christmas or just after Christmas, he'd have a look at what's going on here with the imports and whatnot. So after I'd come back to Australia after that year, we started doing a few things with importing.
Yeah. Well, you got to tell me more about that.
Righto. I actually deferred uni again a second time to go and work with him over there for 12 months. Well, it was a bit less than 12 months with the working holiday visa. You can only do one job for 6 months at a time. So I was with him for six and then with another friend for a few months and then travelled. But this was sort of actually oddly like our good friend Paul Walker, Fast and Furious style. I was living above the car dealership that I worked in. Now, his name's Mr. Hara. Hara in Japanese is field. This was called Field Garage. Hence, some of your older viewers might know of Field Garage Australia, you know, just a pretty small business that we ran. So from that time there, we created that little business over here and started importing cars and parts.
What year was that you started bringing them in?
So that was 03 when I went and worked with him over there. And then for probably the next 10 years, we did that. We started with cars. Now, I think at that time it was we were importing fairly standard cars, not just minor modifications, and everyone wanted stuff that was done up. You know, they wanted all the wheels, the suspension, a bit of engine work. And then they'd go and buy another car, not the sort of the cleaner cars that we had. And then things would break and they'd want stuff from us. So, okay, let's start bringing containers. And we probably got a bit bigger and faster than I expected. Had a couple of years working through some friends' sheds and workshops. And it got to the point where we probably needed to have our own workshop. And by this time, I'd already joined the fire service, and that was my priority in terms of work. And I was only ever doing it as a hobby because I really enjoyed it, you know. We were supporting a lot of the young guys drifting, you know, Simon Mercer, Dan Russell, you know. It's like we're seeing these kids in their old 180 SXs and stuff that are driving around 150 plus Ks an hour sideways without roll cages. Well, no, mate, like, let's put a roll cage in your car. And we were getting the stuff. So it's like, put that in your car so you're safe. Don't worry about, you know, you would just sponsor them. I think that's why the business probably wasn't as successful as it could have been, because I was too nice just giving people stuff. But, you know, it got bigger faster than I expected. That's where I was going. And I didn't really want to have the overheads of my own shed. Because I was working full time, had a family, renovating, I didn't really want to, you know, you'd have to actually pay for someone to be there as well and run the business. Hard to find someone to do that, as you'd know, like not necessarily having someone to trust, but that's invested in it, enjoys it, knows what they're doing. So we sort of, I mean, the Facebook's page is still ticking, but it's one of those things I've always found it hard to let go. When I say it's ticking, it's hiding away in the background somewhere. But, yeah, we sort of shut that down probably 2018 or so, just sort of wound things up because it was, yeah, I said I wasn't providing the service that I really wanted to, not being able to get things fast enough without providing a lot of stock, you know, or holding a lot of stock because I didn't have that space to do that.
Yeah. Because that was how I met you initially.
Mm.
And one I always remember is when you were sponsoring Dan Russell, when he had the car all white and he had a big Field Garage sticker on it. And there was a moment, and I think it was at Stanthorpe or somewhere like that.
Where Carnell Raceway.
Carnell, there you go. And he's ripped the rear bar off and he's shot this rear bar probably 4 or 5 metres in the air.
Rear or front? I don't know.
I think it's a rear bar.
Did you take the photo?
I took the photo.
Yeah.
And I've got a photo
product
somewhere.
Product placement. At its best.
Mate, the Field Garage logo front and centre on this bar
mid-air.
Hovering in midair with Dan at full lock sideways sliding the thing. I mean, that's one of the one of those moments in time.
It was fantastic.
And that was probably the moment where you and I probably connected.
I think we took a photo afterwards, didn't we?
Via that photo going... What a moment. And, you know, Dan as well at that. You know, he was 15 or 16 or something.
Just young as, like, right, mate. Like, I don't mind helping out.
Yeah. Young dude with a great attitude. And, you know, his old man was always there and always, you know, filming and
battling
helping.
Against these semi pros, you know. Yeah. Still pretty amateur.
Still pretty amateur, but like.
Yeah, in the scheme of things.
Yeah. But, you know, had a bit more support, a bit more sponsorship, all those sorts of things. But, you know, to my previous point, you know, you invest in the person because, you know, you sort of went, what a lovely, you know, what a lovely human. And, you know, you just help because you can't help yourself.
Yeah, no, that's sort of it.
It's all right, mate. We're both suckers.
Yeah.
I'm still doing it to this day. I may have accidentally just volunteered to get involved in historic racing.
Oh, fantastic. Which of your cars are you using for that?
No, not mine.
You're just going to drive someone else's car?
No, even worse. I'm going to
buy another.
Jump in and support somebody else.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, just doing what I do in those things. It's I try to get out and they're pulling me back in. I can't get out. I keep trying to get out. I didn't. Yeah.
No.
That I just can't. Mate, I'm a sucker for it.
Sucker for helping out.
And I'm a sucker for the good people as well. I think that's – so Scotty Robinson, who's been on this before, he's just picked up a JPS E30.
Oh.
I don't know if you saw that, but it's Tony Longhurst's car.
Yeah, wow.
So the one he used to race heritage. In the 80s. And then one of Scotty's former customers owned and raced it for many years. Mm. And that gentleman passed and his family – gave permission for Scott to buy that car.
Yeah, yeah, and that they're the stories that mean something and you want to be invested in.
Mate, it's
if you know that
really
they're going to really honour that. And, yeah, exactly right.
Well,
exactly
you know, right. This man was very special to him and, you know, he travelled with him as his mechanic on that car.
Oh.
And so, you know, he helped him buy that car, he helped him race it, he helped, you know, all the way through, you know, rebuilt the engine in his shed with him, you know, really, really special. Like the stuff that matters in life, like your friends.
Yep.
And I've got to share this one. I don't think I've ever said this one on the show before, but have you seen the Harvard study, the generational study? Have you come across that one before?
Maybe.
That
look,
is
my
the longest... I don't have someone to say bring it up. I'm going to make sure I can find the correct name of it. So it is the Harvard – mate, what they did – I'm going to find this just because it's – they started off – so is this the one, adult development? I'll see if I can find it. This is the one. Here we go, Harvard University. So good genes are nice but joy is better. So – Harvard started this study 80 years ago and they have proved through their research, embracing community helps us live longer and be happier. It's the craziest thing and I'd encourage anyone to look it up. I'll throw a link in the show notes.
Yeah.
But effectively, they started tracking these people. So here we go. They started tracking the health of 268 Harvard sophomores in 1938 during the Great Depression, and they hoped the longitudinal study would reveal clues to leading healthy, happy lives. Now, this story is actually crazy. I believe there's actually two fellas that became presidents. It was, you know, like crazy. And now they ended up including... you know, because it started off with just the students there and then they included their wives and their children and it's gone on and on. the thing that blew me away is the happiness. As, you know, how content people were with their lives had nothing to do with the status that they reached in life. Yeah. It had nothing to do with how much money they made. It had nothing to do with their family, their children, any of that. Their happiness is measurably better based on the strength of their relationships.
Yeah.
So their personal friendships is the thing that will dictate how your life goes.
Yeah, wow.
And that, ever since I read that, like that has blown me away. And it's actually helped me to, and I guess I don't have to explain this to you in great detail. When you run your own business, you put a lot of time into it.
Absolutely.
To the sacrifice of a lot of other things. Sure. You know, to your family, to your partner, yeah. to your kids, to your, yeah. you know, your network of friends. I reckon I was lucky, you know, some of my older friends, I'd probably only see them once every 3 years. Yep. Like terrible stuff. And as I've gotten older and then as I've, you know, come across this as well, I've over the last probably 3 or 4 years, I've started to really reinvest my time back into my personal relationships. Yeah. And it's, I think, a big part of why this podcast is so important to me now is that I actually get a chance to build a deeper relationship with each and every person
around you
that,
yep.
or that comes to you. Yep. That matters to me, but also the people that come and share their story with me. Mm. Because, you know, it's reasonably intimate. You know, you're telling me, you know, stories about your life and why and how and all these things. And, you know, I guess maybe it's very selfish of me that I would just like to, I don't know, build stronger relationships with people that I think are awesome.
Well, I think you've had a lot of good people on this show, mate.
And that just comes from, I guess, the fact that I just enjoy the company of good humans.
Yeah, yep.
And I've come to understand, I don't know, I can smell, I can see the red flags, you know, of people that have an ulterior motive.
Yep.
You know, which happens less when you've got nothing to show for
for
what you do. But, you know, once you sort of figure a few things out, you know, interestingly, people then want stuff from you.
Yes.
And you see more of that and you start to appreciate the fact of the people that just, you know, send you spicy memes or, you know, the people that you laugh with and the people that you know, you share your life with and you share your stories with and you share your trials and tribulations.
It has to improve things.
Well, mate, it does, and this is the best part.
Not just there, but in your workspace, in other areas. It has to. If that is all going well, it makes sense.
And this was what I found so crazy about this Harvard study, was just the fact that the people were more satisfied with their lives because of the strength of their friendships. And interestingly, you and I must be about the same age, because if you graduated in 98... So I left high school in 97, yep. So I finished then. So we are, you know, near enough to bang on. We've you know, sort of done a very similar number of years and kids and all those sorts of things. And as your children, you know, get a little bit older and don't necessarily need you to do every single function for them, you know, there's then a bit more space in your life.
Yes, yes.
To be able to include other things.
Yes.
And that's probably a big part of, you know, what this is, is making room for that and sharing people's stories and having, I don't know, I guess just having the interest to want to share those stories.
Yeah.
Because, you know, today is, what day of the week is it? I don't even know. It's Thursday today.
Thursday, yeah.
Yeah. And you and I have been chatting about this and you sent me a message at, you know, what was that, about 1:30?
Yeah.
This afternoon going, hey, mate, short notice, what do you reckon? We make it go tonight?
Like I said, like, you know, you've still got to consult with your wife. I had to check with my wife.
Yeah. And, you know, my boys.
That's what it's about. It's just being up front. What do you think of this? Yeah, righto, let's go.
My boy's a bit crook, but my wife's like, look, I got this.
Yep.
And,
you know. Those good support networks, mate.
Mate, my podcast studio wasn't even built. Nothing was plugged in.
It forced you into this, didn't it?
It forced me into it. And honestly, if you hadn't have come in, I would have just left it like shit everywhere.
Still faffing around.
I wouldn't have put it all together. Yep. And, you know, even though it's not set up and it's not perfect.
Doesn't matter.
We put it together and we got the thing
made
going.
It work. You make it happen.
And we're here and we made it happen and we're like having this conversation.
It's living the dream, isn't it?
It is living the dream. And that's sort of the ethos of all the things I've been doing with that. And oddly, that's what's at the core of it is just being comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah.
Being you,
yep.
Whatever that looks like.
Yep.
You know, the things I teach my boy, kindness and manners.
Mm.
And then everything else sorts itself out. And they're the sorts of people that through that, the little things that I do with all the living the dream stuff, it is primarily it's to make people laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
And just go and stop taking ourselves so seriously.
So seriously, exactly right.
Because holy shit, I took myself so seriously for so long. And I mean, that wasn't, I wouldn't recommend that.
No. Where's your Dan?
This is much more fun.
Yep.
Like being an absolute lunatic, I like that. And I think that's why I appreciate in particular the stupidity that you do with the bikes and outraising money. Mm-hmm. Like it's just madness. Like you did it on a fixie the other year, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Like that looked revolting.
So obviously, as I said, I ride bikes, push bikes, but I mainly do track cycling around the velodrome. So that got me into the fixed gear thing got me into the velodrome. But one year we were doing a joint ride with Fire and Rescue New South Wales. We thought, well, let's do Sydney to Brisbane. So it's a bit bigger than what we'd normally do, a bit longer ride. I thought, if I raise a certain amount of money, I'm going to do this on my track bike. Brake on the front so it's legal, but 1,000 Ks, fixed gear. It was tough. But, you know, no matter what challenge I might set myself, I always think back, like, this isn't tough. It's what these kids are going through that's really tough. Their families. That's the tough thing. And you think of that and you think of the people that you've met and you think, righto, I don't hurt so much anymore.
Yeah, well, there's definitely something wrong with you. You're a sucker for punishment, isn't it? I think that's what it is. And do you know where that leads me?
Yeah. Tell me.
Mazda Rotaries.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's clearly something wrong with you. You're a sucker for punishment.
No, it's all, talk to me. It's all a big misunderstanding.
Talk to me about why. So Bo has a lovely RX-7, the good-looking one. You've got a Series 6, isn't it?
Series 8.
Series 8? Yeah. Oh, yours a bit later.
It's a 2000 model.
Ooh.
Still, they're all the 6, 7, 8, which is really only an Australian American thing, but don't worry about that. It's all the FD3S model.
Mm. So the sexy, swoopy. The 90s was such a good time for Japanese cars.
92, 93 to 2002, they were built, those ones.
What a time.
The last, the last production car with pop-up lights.
Was it really?
I believe so.
Because it's very sad. I mean, I know pop-up lights are bad and they probably cut people in half and stuff.
Yeah. That was the big thing, I believe, the pedestrian safety. But I believe that the RX-7 was the last production car with pop-up lights. And I love them.
Mate, they're so beautiful. Mm. Like the line. Oh. Do you do the thing at the lights? I've seen this. I didn't realise it was a thing. But apparently it's a thing. When you see a car at the lights that also has pop-ups, you pop the lights up
sometimes,
at each other.
Because you can pop them up without actually turning the lights on.
And it's like a hello pop-up light owners do to each other.
Sometimes, yeah.
I thought that was so cool.
That's like, that's my dream car. And I'm lucky that we're in the position to be able to get that. And then my wife in a week time said, well, if you can find one for this much, you can get it. And then I found one within 2 weeks, within 50 kilometres of my home. Look, that was partially the reason I did Field Garage. Because I enjoyed it and it was a good hobby, but it was to then buy an RX-7, which has pretty much always been my dream car. And here I am, 4 years of pretty much daily driving it now and very minimal issues because, I don't know, I guess I have a bit of mechanical sympathy and probably don't drive as hard as it could or should be driven all the time, and partly because I don't want to be a dickhead on the roads. Time and a place, and that's what the tracks are for.
You also carry your push bike around.
Yeah, yeah, a little suction cup rack.
On your RX-7.
Yeah, yeah, suction cup racks.
Because you're a lunatic.
Get down to the velodrome, do a few laps there, come home.
Do you get a few looks?
Oh, yeah. That's when you get the most looks. So, yeah. I didn't buy it for that. I just put it, you know, I bought it for me, you know.
Oh, no, but I mean driving around with a bloody push bike on the roof of your RX-7. I mean.
Especially, you know, four-wheel drives and they look across and...
They just see a pushy flooding through the air.
Pushy with no one on it. Like, oh.
Hang on. Wait, what?
Yeah. The highway's the best. Yeah.
And why is that?
Oh, just people don't expect it. Just this car, just really low car. Just
what year did you buy that one? When did you get it?
4 years ago. It'll be 4 years in August it'll be. I've had it. So what's now? 23? So 2019.
Wow. Yeah. So not that long. And you got it just before COVID tax went mental.
Yes, thankfully. Whew. Thankfully. But again, I bought it for me. I bought it to enjoy it. I don't care what people might think it's worth or what, you know, whatever. Bought it for me.
It's just what you always wanted.
Yeah. And lucky that I've got a supportive wife that allowed me to. It's like anything. We always chat about that sort of stuff. Got to be upfront and honest about it. No point in hiding it.
You've actually done better than most people I know. My brother actually had a Series 4, so like the wedge shape RX-7.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
and,
love it.
I'm pretty sure he helped pay for, you know, Phil's Rotary's existence for a couple of years there.
Oh, yeah.
He did two engines and three gearboxes, I think. So, I mean, he must have also been thrashing the ring out of it.
Maybe.
It was a non-turbo as well, so it was just and like it was so loud.
Yep.
You know, it was back in the days when chrome wheels were cool, to apply some context to how long ago this was.
Late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what was that? That would have been the late 90s. Yeah, late 90s, early 00s.
Yep.
That he would have had that with a big set of chromies on it, a dump pipe. But yeah, mate, that car scared me off rotaries forever. I don't care how cool it is. I don't care how good it sounds. It's bloody revolting.
No, it is. Actually, and like my wife thought my car sounded pretty loud initially, until I got a few people over that are actually Bridgeported and loud. So okay, it's not so bad then.
Yeah,
it's still loud compared to, you know, the Maxima we had and the car now, but it's not too bad.
No, there's louder and
yeah,
and
absolutely. Loud.
Now,
like anything faster, there's always faster. I don't care about that. Like I enjoy it with what it's got, and it's
because they're beautiful.
Yeah,
they're beautiful. They're just, as I said, that was peak Japanese design. Honestly, I think it was peak
car design. Yeah,
yeah.
And that's my opinion. Like, I don't care if you think different, that's fine.
But I also just think that the 90s was peak automotive design. The cars that came out.
Germany.
Yeah, Japan, mate, everywhere. Germany, Japan, everyone was just killing it. Like the best looking cars, like E39 M5 is still like my hero
classic,
car.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there was just something about, and like the 90s interiors and like the wraparound, the way that you get into them and it feels like a cockpit.
Yep.
Like when you get in a Supra and stuff.
The Supra and the FD, for
and
sure.
It wraps around you. And I just picked up a 1997 E36, and it's got the same thing in the dash. Mm. The dash has, like, it's not a flat dash. Like, you get in any car these days and you can just use it as a ruler from edge to edge, and then it's got an iPad in the middle.
Yeah.
And they just all look the same. They got a bloody iPad in the middle, digital dash, and a straight line. And I'm like, they just suck. They're so bad. There's no, you know, there's just...
Doesn't have that. Feel.
There's no spice. There's no spice to it. Whereas you get in these things and you feel like you're getting into some sort of rocket ship.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you want like an ignition sequence, like and the Top Gun theme music playing in the background while you fire the bloody thing up. And it's even just driving that E36 around and having that sort of wraparound cockpit where you feel like it's designed around the driver.
Yep.
And I can't remember who I was talking
about. Just that pure driving that enjoyment. Pure,
and it was back when, because I don't even know what BMW's slogan is now, but it was back when they were, wasn't it the ultimate driving machine?
Yeah. It had to have been one. Sounds very, very BMW.
Yeah. And that was like their singular goal, was like to be, you know, front engine, rear wheel drive, 50-50 weight balance.
Yep.
Like everything was about the driver
yes.
and that driving experience. And I feel like that was lost.
In a lot of areas, for sure. I get that. And I get maybe a lot of people have changed as well. They're just trying to get from A to B. They're just trying to do this, do that. They might not want that experience anymore. We do.
Well, I'm sure they don't, but they also didn't grow up with it, so they don't have the nostalgia around that as well, where you just...
Oh, it's like any era though, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. You think about... You know,
oh, look, I've got all this disposable income now. Let's buy a 30-year-old car that I wanted back then.
Well, that's pretty much my life right now. It's just...
Yeah, your list of 30-year-old cars.
I have a fairly significant list of 30-year-old shitboxes that I'd like to own.
Oh, they're the best.
And most of them are at, like, the bottom of the cycle at the moment. You know, like, cars sort of go backwards, and, you know, they're down to, like, $1,000 where nobody wants them.
Yep.
And then you give it another 5 or 6 years, and then they start becoming classics again. I look for them as they're tapping the bottom and nobody's interested, and they're going, ooh, that's the worst. My wife still won't let me buy an AU Falcon.
Well, you've already got one.
Oh, mate, that's an ED Falcon.
Yeah, one Falcon.
Yeah, but
one Falcon's enough.
No, mate, AU, beautiful. But she really, she's not down with that.
No.
I threatened to pick one of those up.
Oh, look, how far do you want to push it, though?
All the way.
Yeah.
There was a paint shop just down the road from here, and I went there with a car club thing with my dad. And over his spray booth, he had just in massive lettering, "He who dies with the most toys wins."
That's and you.
I, mate, in this guy's shed.
You're giving it a go.
They had, you know, 358 and, you know, old Porsches and just beautiful just things.
Stuff. Yeah.
And, you know, that's not my league, mate. I'm not playing with the big boys.
It doesn't need to be, though.
But I don't really want to be.
No.
Is the other thing. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. If, you know, you just had money to set on fire, you know, I'd probably pick up a few fun things. But what I really like is cars you can drive, because along with that analog experience is the fact that you can take it to the car. You know, you can take the car anywhere, and if you cop a ding in the side or accidentally back it into something, that's not, you know.
Not the end of the world.
It's not earth shattering.
No. Look, you know, I still park mine in car parks. I'd drive it to work, take it up to O'Reilly's, you know, taking the kids up there. I still drive it. I wanted to drive it. Same, like you say, if it gets a ding in it, annoying maybe, but not the end of the world.
Nah, it should be right. You can fix them.
Yeah.
Whereas when they're lovely old things and then you've got to like scour the globe to find the parts, and the parts are like criminally expensive.
Yes.
It takes some of the fun.
A little bit of the fun away.
I'm even finding it actually with the Land Cruiser at the moment. Like, there's lots of the parts don't exist anymore.
Yeah. So you've got to find an aftermarket option or fabricate it yourself.
Fabricate it yourself, or you've got to go through the wreckers and like find bits that you can fix and repurpose if the part has actually given up the ghost.
Yeah.
You're like, ugh. Yeah, that's becoming a surprisingly complex part of my life.
With the 27 cars that you're trying to keep running.
Mate, I've only got four.
Only four?
Yeah, I've trimmed it down.
Trimmed it down?
Yeah. Trying to keep it...
sensible.
Sensible, yeah.
No.
I just bought a jet ski that doesn't work for a carton of beers, so...
Well, sorry, that's where I'm getting confused. You've got the jet ski and the motorbike too.
And the motorbikes.
Yeah.
Look, if you count all the toys, there's four cars, three bikes and a ski. So I'm on my way.
Yeah.
I'm on my way.
So I'm more into the push bikes.
Yeah. See, I was a downhill guy back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, really enjoyed that. It hurt myself a lot. Like, I've still got holes in my ankles and stuff from where I, like, you know, where you cop the front. Yeah, because I'd wear cleats and...
Yeah.
Go a bit harder.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a mountain bike. I enjoy it, but I'm aware of my limits and I... pull back a bit.
Yeah, it was the hurting myself. Because I've done a little bit more recently and I just don't have the confidence to just send it like I used to.
No.
Where you'd just be like, she'll be right, mate. Because, like, she won't be right.
No,
like,
she won't be right.
Yeah, when you get it wrong, it's not a particularly good time.
No.
Mate, with what you're doing this year, talk to me about Bikes for Burns 2023.
Okay.
Where are we up to? What have you fundraised? What are you aiming to do? How can we help you?
Well, just chatting about it. It's been a massive thing, as I said. This year's Gladstone to Brisbane again. We're going down the coast. So it's the Coastal Cruiser Tour, we're calling it. Some really nice spots along the way. Agnes Water. I can't even remember off the top of my head where we're going, but it's down the coast. So it's going to be really nice. Good time of year for it. End of May, start of June. Now, how you could probably help, I don't know, like talking about it, as I said, you already donate every single year, which really grateful for. Now, there's this cycling thing called Everesting. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Never.
You know how high Everest is?
Quite.
8848 metres. There's this thing in cycling called Everesting that where you ride your bike to match the elevation of Everest. Now, I don't really climb hills that well, but another friend has claimed that if she fundraises a certain amount that she will do that. Oh. I stupidly said, maybe I'll have a go. You know, normally I'd support her on that. She's doing it virtually on this thing called Zwift, so it's like a computer game, but you ride your bike and the power meter calculates every blah, 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 blah. Don't need to go too far into that, but it's still a hike. So riding your bike to match the elevation of Everest. And I said to my friend, well, if you want me to do it, I need $5,000. Someone to put $5,000 on my fundraising tally and I'll do it.
So we've got to try and hurt Bo.
Yeah.
How much are you up to? Or well, is this an additional $5,000?
Yeah, this is an additional $5,000. I'm at about three now. So, I mean, I'll probably, with the things that I'm doing currently, I'll probably get to about five. So if there's a business out there or someone that has $5,000 burning in their pocket, now, look, I don't care if you do or don't, but if someone's out there and they want to see me hurt, this is probably the biggest way that will get me to do it. That's the buy-in number.
See, the worst part is I don't want to hurt you, but you know, it's for the kids.
It's for the kids, exactly right. I hurt, they feel better.
So another $5,000. And this year, when does it kick off? How long have you got to go?
End of May, so pretty much a month from now.
Months from now, okay. And then what are you riding this year? Have you got...
Just my normal push bike, my normal road bike that, you know, just an aluminium thing that was built actually down the Gold Coast locally. So, you know, like you, like sort of like eclectic things. So I like to support like the Australian industry, of course. This was secondhand when I bought it, but yeah, just my general road bike. I'll be doing it on that, I think.
And how can people follow your journey? How can people, because I know that your Facebook page got crushed and
you had to start again last year and started it. You know, I don't specifically care so much about people following me, but the Bike for Burns journey. So Bike for Burns on Facebook, BikeForBurns or Bike for the number Burns. And usually through there you can follow as it ramps up. It's not active all through the year, but as the Bike for Burns ramps up and leads into the actual bike ride, there's a fair bit more stuff there. There's links to donation pages there. And otherwise, I'd say look me up, but my name is not Bo Hanlon, it's Ho Banlon. You know, but I'll probably change that soon anyway. Yeah, back to my actual name.
We'll have to find that. We'll throw some links.
There's that thing called technology.
Yeah,
you can link things.
We have the show notes where we can put in all the links so that people can click on these things. But what I always think is important, and this is just me and my what I do as a day job, and the reason I'm saying that it's so important for you to have all this stuff out there is so that we can follow that journey.
Yeah.
Because I think I'd love to see more of that journey.
And look, that's probably one of the things that I do put on Facebook. Since I've restarted my new account, I haven't put a lot on there. I got a bit dejected after losing a lot of the photos and memories. You know, more so the links and you know, I've got no one's phone numbers. I was just talking messenger. All of those contacts and links for people that I dealt with and spoke with before, that's gone, and I'm slowly building that back up. You know, I think, because I try and touch base with people. Oh, and then I add them back again, and it's getting that back out there. And I add a lot of the Bike for Burns things as I go along, you know, through the ride and leading up to it. Yeah.
Because I think it's lovely to follow that journey and, you know, to follow the the things that you're doing and why you're doing it and how you do it and, you know, what it's for, they're lovely stories. And the fact that you put yourself physically through quite a bit of grief.
Yeah, to put it into relative terms, like I usually ride maybe 100 to 150 kilometres a week, which for some people seems a lot, but for a cyclist, that's not much. And I don't really do many hills. I just try and do the track cycling stuff, which for me is high speed for short distances, you know, relatively not as fast as a lot of the other people, which is fine competitively. But doing the longer distances is a struggle. You get through it with general fitness, but, you know, this sort of climbing challenge that my mate Quinn has sort of thrown her hand up to do, she's been training for that for quite a while. And these Everesting attempts, people do train for months to get the Ks and the climbing in their legs to do.
How long would it generally take to do that? How long would you spend?
10 to 14 hours.
And do you do it all at once? Like, how does this happen?
I've had a few friends that do it. They would go to Mount Cutha and they'll do repeats of the back of Mount Cutha. So they might do five, for example, sit down for 5-10 minutes, have a bite to eat. Obviously, you know, hydration food's massive. But they'll maybe sit down for 10 minutes, go again, do another five until they're done. I can't actually even remember how many repeats you need to do off the back of Mount Cutha. You've probably been up there on your bike.
I have.
Motorbike, obviously.
Correct.
It's nice.
And it's very pleasant.
Like some of these people, you know, the time up the back of Mount Cutha they'll be doing in 6 to 7 minutes, the faster people. I'm at about 10, just chugging away. But those sorts of rides isn't about speed specifically. Yeah, you're just trying to tap away, conserve energy.
I'm tired just thinking about this, mate. You're killing me. That is a lot of work.
I quietly sort of mentioned to someone that I would maybe do it if there was that little donation, but you've sort of dug that out and sort of...
Mate, it's out there now.
It's out there now.
Now you have to do it.
If someone donates that lazy 5K, I'll have a go. But, yeah, again, I'm not going to have a go. I'll do it.
I'll
keep going until it's done.
Anyone that would ride from, what was that, Sydney to Brisbane?
Sydney to Brisbane.
On a fixie?
Yeah.
That's a terrible idea. Oh,
you get through it. Just get on the bike and push the pedals.
Oh, mate. I'm really keen, if you could just list out where people could, so Bikes for Burns.
Yep, so Facebook.
Facebook?
Yep.
So they can find you on there. Is there a website or something? Is there something that
is just
done?
It's basically run on Facebook.
Yeah.
As I said, leading up to the ride, we post a few more things, you know, the sponsors that do support us. And that's obviously Bike for the Burns things, not me specifically. And then obviously on my Facebook page is where I sort of put things regarding my fundraising. They're probably the two things. Now it will send you to, I do usually provide a link for that fundraising on my page, and then there's a general one on the Bike for Burns page.
And it's tax deductible.
Donations for that are tax deductible.
There you go. If you've got a tax problem this year, we can help you sort that out.
Yeah.
It's always a
bonus.
Right near the end of financial
it is.
Year too.
Hopefully it's an incentive. I don't know.
Well, it depends if it's a commercial incentive. I'd love to have more of those problems. Yeah. I'm working on it.
Yeah.
Bo, I'm going to wrap this up because it's actually getting pretty late at night.
Time flies.
Would you believe it? But mate, it's been so lovely having you in here to chat and talk about, you know, what you do and driving the big red truck and cycling and rotaries and drifting and all the fun things. And mate, I guess, you know, from me to you, I'm very proud of what you do. I'm really in awe of how hard you work at these things and, you know, the humility that you bring to them and the fact that you just diligently chip away at it, you know, without fanfare. And that was a big reason that I wanted to have you on here so that we could, you know, at least shine a light on the good human that you are and the lovely things that you do in the background there. Because, you know, people like you are, you know, that's what makes a good community. If there were more bow handlers out there, the world would be a better place, my friend. So, you know, thank you for what you do.
Appreciate that. That makes me happy. Makes my heart happy.
It's good, mate. That's why we support good humans. So if you don't know Bo, you should probably jump in and follow him. There'll be links to be able to find him. And on that note, we're going to wind this up.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Bo, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on here. Well, we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining us.